Tate, continuation with Albert Zeiler, Kate Kennedy, 27th of April, 1972. We're now starting on the part of the story. Okay, so you were there, General Dahlberg.
Well, I guess, no, this was in Frankfurt. In
we're still in Frankfurt, yeah.
Close Dustin, yeah.
Close Dustin. What was that Close Dustin like? What was that? What was the actual name of that close?
Concept. Well, actually, it was taken over by the British, but it was supposed to be an international camp, you know. Mm-hmm. So all of the VIPs from Berlin were there, and the boys from the industry and so on. Before.
So this is Schloss Kronberg.
Schloss Kronberg, and they called it
Camp Dustin.
Camp Dustin.
And they had all the smallest prisons there.
That was for VIPs.
VIPs,
I guess I don't know why they put that in.
What did you do in there? What was it like? What did you have
that was, we didn't have anything to do there. We just were kept there.
But what, did you have a big palace room? Or?
Huh?
Where did you live? In what sort of
room? In little room.
Little room.
So that split up in little rooms, you know. Uh-huh. And there, of course, was this doctor from Adolf Hitler was there, and wrestling the big industry, steel industry guy was there. And, So then, as I said, General Gondarov was forced through this camp there, just to stay over a night there, because he was taken from the army to cook up. And when he saw the name on my door there, so he came back in of the guard there, and he said, why are you going here? What? I don't know.
Well,
so I told him that the other four guys are... there too. See, I had a separate room. And the other four guys were together in a bigger room there, I guess. So I told him that the other ones are here too, and Heinrich told us that we were supposed to be taken over to the United States. But we are still here. So he said, well, everyone thinks you're there too. When, then he said, I'll get you out of here. So, of course, my thought was, well, how can a general of a defeated army get the out of a prison.
Yeah.
There is a prison inside. That was, this was really supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
So then, of course, the 2 weeks, General Blomberg was taken up to the top next day, and I guess it was some week or 10 days later, a British force showed up, with British officers, and 65 of us up. No? Yeah. Because I was up in at close at close contact,
mm-hmm.
And so we had to go on this truck there, and so we asked they are taking us, so they wouldn't tell us. I guess about a couple hours later, so they had to make their tea break, you know. So we asked them again, and so I guess the general direction was north there, so we came to where were our panelists held, and there was Professor von Braun, Asta, and they were, where were they?
Oh, well, they were, well, they moved from Obioff by the Reuter, and then they went over to,
Very collected, very had collected all our seniors. No,
that was later.
Before lunch.
So all the Remagard was some day.
No, before. It was the middle Germany. Where Astor was.
Oh, was it
Bleicherode?
Bleicherode,
yeah. Yeah, collected our rights there, you know, when it was
okay.
And so, of course, that was the first time when I heard that my wife was with the boy, you know.
Yeah.
So, from Hamburg, because yeah. Hamburg came from up there.
Right.
So, I talked this British officer of interest to go to Bleicherode in order to see my thing to my finger, we came, they packed the grape fruit, because there my finger was there. So, so we went on. Somebody did a cut out, I don't know where my life was. Temporarily. So they took us up to Cuxhaven and split us up I guess it was Steinberg and myself, we were taken into the camp for the workers, and Bebus and the other ones were taken into the second camp. This was consisted of two camps, one interrogation camp and one working camp or whatever it was. So I was put to work there then by the British. We had to check out the components of the V2s to collect it, and then we assembled them and put them, checked the whole vehicle out. Of course, in the meantime, we also went to some interrogation by different British officers and so on and so forth. And so finally we I guess the British just told us we have to assemble 8 of the tools and fire 5 of them. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's just what we finally did is we assembled 5 vehicles, I guess, and then we fired 3. Mm-hmm. And after the first one which we put out, this British security officer, you know, he, of course, he had a bet with the commanding, British commanding officer there, that we will sabotage the fire. We never get it off the ground. So, and this is what he told me. I guess that's a case of champagne or wine, whatever it was. And then, so this security officer had told me, this is about, I don't know why he did. Why so many officers get the idea that we might sabotage the passenger? Sure, it's a good fire. So, and this officer, he never went, left me alone. You know, I was the last one to leave the long stretch and put the igniter in, hook it up and leave. So, of course, strange thing happened. Of course, we always had a couple of spare igniters in this blockhouse there. So a strange thing happened on the first trial of firing this machine. The igniter didn't work. So of course, as soon as we saw the igniter doesn't work, we went through the depressurized tank and so forth. And so of course it's security officer immediately came to me and said, what's going on here? So by that time the telephone rang and the commanding officer was asking for the security officer. I told you they would sabotage it. Then I told him, I said, what? Just a few minutes. I take it. A new igniter in and then they go. So of course I took a new igniter and went out to the long stripe and this security officer right up there. Put the new igniter in and we went back into this bunker there and we had a successful time. And of course it was quite a relief for him because yeah. I mean, they were under the impression he would stop it.
How about the paint that came first?
Well, I didn't get it. I mean,
you
it
didn't
was,
get it. How did you get it?
That was not fast. So then of course we were through with this final 3 vehicles and on the 23rd of October, I guess it was, yeah, I went through the bit start procedures there because I still was in uniform or something. And so got my discharge papers signed off. And so the whole tent was destroyed, and I took my little few little things there and went out the gate there, and as soon as I stepped outside the gate, of course, two American officers were waiting there.
Waiting for
you. Well, yeah. Well, I didn't know that I was on loan to the British Army, you know, but I mean, this was agreement between the British and the Americans, and so I didn't know it. So, of course, the Americans knew of such events. So these two officers were just waiting for me. So I didn't make but 2 steps outside, I guess, and they had me there. And then I said, well, why do you have to come with us? I said, no, I'm discharged now. So I was proud of my discharge papers, and I pulled out my discharge paper, I put in my discharge paper. Then the officer said, well, I tell him one thing. Signed by the Polish army, signed by the French army, signed by the British army, but it isn't signed by the American army. So back in you go. So I went back in, and then I guess it was a few days later, then they picked us up and flew us down to Landshut. Flew us down to Landshut, where I then came together with my family. And then I was, I guess it must have been the 26th or something like this, or 26th when I arrived there. And they wanted to kick me out then a couple of 3 days later. And I didn't, at least I didn't want. And so when I went to the Peter's office here, just to go through the December it was to get clearance to leave the country. So I told the doctor I have an insurance policy, and he looked at my policy, said, yeah, it's sure, so you can't go after that. That's the way it is. So that's how I got out of the trip. Well, the only, I think the only little problem we had is for them that, you know, the British here, the GI doesn't have much peace. And we actually didn't get much peace anyhow because they were so poor. Yeah. Of course, we as prisoners, we got a little less. So we said, okay, I mean, if we have to work, then we have to get a deal, the same food as the British GI get there. So we was refused to us for the first go around the end, I guess. I think we said, well, we could, we don't have to get to the first work in there, and I guess we were 2 days, we didn't go down to the assembly area and sit for 2 days, and so many of us were in the middle of the to get to the same
How many were
Well, in our camp, in the working camp, there must have been, you know, there were also many guys there from all the outfits besides the two. So I really don't know. There were quite a few guys there. I really couldn't tell you. I guess might be some of 50 or something like this. I don't know. And then in the other camp, it was close by. There were quite a few there. But mostly, I guess, the women.
And what did the British have to help the gang from this fire?
Well, what they want to do is they want to get the French, they want to acquaint themselves, which is the parts and components, how they are assembled, how they are checked out, and how they are, how the preparations are made at the firing site in order to fire the two. So they have infrastructure. We went through it step by step with
it. You think they had better form, I guess. Did they backfire the form?
No.
Yeah, they got five volumes.
No, I haven't seen
a lot. I'll bring all the photos.
I haven't
looked it over.
No, they went into quite some details, and they want to get acquainted with the each and every component in the region.
Okay, when getting back, you said Landshut, and you came over to the States.
When I came over to the States, I was with the first transport here.
Yeah, so very first, the Beachman and Maury, United States Department. And he had just asked one question. He asked if I would ask you, I guess,
fairly clear that the DC lunch is at 1:10. And there are any stories or incidents from the first guy that would have survived for you to start how that whole operation launched and started up in the country.
Well, I know, of course, if you know the government, the whole group came over here in, I guess, three months ago. Okay, I was in the first group because I got out of the first one, I got out of the second one, and then I finally made
50. You played the lunch at all that
I played the lunch at all
that time.
What
did you do all that time?
25th of October until 6th of January. Well, I tell you, once you have lots of things to do because there are not too many men left, so all the families there, they need some, I don't know, some firewood or some certain things to fix and so on and so forth. I don't know what I got there. What? No, if you're in this housing project there, I mean, quite a few things are damaged. And, I mean, not, well, it's just damaged by people, you know. So, I mean, that was quite a large amount of work, yeah. So then we came here.
When did you actually leave?
I guess it was 6th of January.
5th of January.
6th of January, I guess it was.
You went to Lahore?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To Lahore, yeah.
And from there, we shipped to New York.
What and ship were you on? You remember the name?
That was a Liberty ship. A Liberty ship. So, and then of course we had to stay on the boat until on the ship until all the GIs, it was a good transfer, until all the GIs were taken off and
did they keep you completely separate during the trip?
Well, they didn't keep us completely separate, but pretty well separate. Yeah. We couldn't stop it anything. So, somebody, and then after this group transporter was unloaded, they took us off and had taken, taken by buses then down into somewhere in the Washington area. Somewhere in an isolated area, then there are some army trucks waiting for us, and they took us to Fort Alexandria.
Oh yeah, Fort Alexandria.
That's right. And I guess I was there for, I don't know, 10 days or something like that.
You were there?
Nothing.
Just that.
Just that and that. What happened?
How big was your group, the third group?
No, it wasn't too big. 15, 20. I guess I had a year somewhere. And then from there, of course, they took us to Fort Bliss.
You went down by train.
Down by train to Fort Bliss. And next day, after we arrived, next day I was taken to White Sands in order to join Peter's group there. And yes, on the U2.
Oh, but
Peter was in charge of the U2 preparations and so on and so forth.
How did you find these V2s once they've been shipped over? Were they pretty good stuff?
Well, I know, some parts in pretty good shape, or some parts weren't. I mean,
where were they on?
Some parts
were laying around the desert.
They were laying around in the desert, and then of course the wind blew them around and so on and so forth. And they had, of course, tons and tons of this insulation which went into the oxygen tank that they steamed there. I mean, of certain things they went overboard, and other important things they didn't get enough, you know.
Yeah, you had nothing to do with the loading of those V2s.
Right? I had nothing to do. No, this was done by Software, and I don't know who was.
Well, we know the Americans. I wonder who the Germans were, might have been there helping advise them.
I could find this out. But Well, Hamill was there. Henry was there, yeah, I know. And of course, the Germans advised them to take this, take that, and so on and so forth.
You know who was at the plant at that time?
I don't know. But,
it was a pretty good job.
Yeah, it was a pretty good job. Yeah. But of course, in certain cases, the American officers didn't listen.
Yeah.
No, that's the story, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, of course, I was then, I was able to send them from there. Started off to, of course, the group, which was there already, they had already sorted out quite a few components of things and so forth. And we'll be there to finish up the temporary test, right? The test by the VP on the hill side there. And so then we took it out to the launch, right? It was fine to the Tuesday.
Did you have static test first? It was a static test.
Yeah, we made a static test first and in order to celebrate the officers. So,
right.
So often, as always. And see what it is, you can be directing all that.
Right. But it was more or less straightforward. There's no particular problems, any things you particularly met?
No, I don't. What we did is we went through all the components.
Through all the components.
All the components in quite some detail.
Mm-hmm.
So we did complete reconditioning jobs, so to speak, you know. And no matter whether it was a valve or it was the turbine or whatever it is, you know. So we went to a complete reconditioning job. And extended this one hangar there. And we had, of course, the old gas, whatever. My friend was just not at that time.
What is wrong?
I mean, the board from the side where they had just been like, in the morning when you woke up, you had to wipe the sand out of your eyes in order to open into your mud, right?
Quite different from the Heidelberg, right?
Quite different. So for some of us, it was very interesting because we never saw a desert before. And we off the earth, if we had time, of course, we walked around in the desert and to find out what desert looks like. So, what desert life you find and so forth. So of course we couldn't leave the tent, and then the fog mountains in the background, and I was a mountain man, and of course that really intrigued me. And that was Dr. Smith was there and Peter was myself and good. And they all are mountain climbers, so I finally decided that we want to go up there, but we couldn't leave the tent, so I went to the commanding officer. Tarsus is the excellent. And I asked him, went to the office, and I asked him if he would like to wrap in the month to stay over the weekend, since I came back there and so on. So he looked at the commanding officer and said, it's very nice, and you won't find any Americans up there anyway, so let him go. And he said, okay. So I guess I have 2 millimeters left, and I went down to the mess house, and I said, the first in mess house is that he was the service in the top of the mountain, and stood there when I see it out there. And then I could get some food, which is the center of it. And I had to hook up with him. So of course, this mess house, he was afraid that my staff would have something out there. He gave me so much food, I just couldn't get out of the bed, you know. And so we went during the weekend when we didn't have to work. Of course, we climbed each and every peak of this mountain there. And then later on, after a few years, later on, we left there, I think. I heard that the Americans started out to go up there too.
So
they started
to go up. So you had the meal stands. You had to buy meal stands. They gave you...
Yeah.
Well, how did your English come along in those days?
It was pretty bad, but...
Did you have classes, or how did they...
Well, yeah, we had informal classes, you know. And, I didn't think that I would stay, so I didn't think I would have anyhow, because it was just for a year, and then years over. I was my wife 20 years over, and I had three shoes and a pair of shoes and stuff, three shirts. So I'm becoming homeless. He said, "Well, that's nothing to do with my vehicle. So that's so good."
Okay.
So I stayed in.
Well, she came over later. She
came over later.
Did you want to stay? Were you happy staying?
What? Because at that time, you know, it was pretty rough.
Pretty rough.
You know, anyhow.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have known that to start out. I mean, I wasn't too cheap and still the nine out, so
yeah,
I
might as well
say. Might as well say,
yeah. Okay.
So, okay.
Well, yeah, the only other, the final area that you wanted to know about the, about the first Redstone rocket, about how that dovetail with the V2 started. When did you actually start the launching of the Redstone?
The first Redstone.
That was you, wasn't that you?
Yeah.
The first one was here.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea?
Yeah,
that was...
The first lesson was
fired
in...
I guess that was August 53? Yeah. Well, the question was, that was about 10 years after the first V2. Yeah. Did you have any general comment or anything you can say about the first Red Cell in terms of what did that represent as progress?
I don't know how much what is what is representing progress, because the erection for the working, I mean the erection was only a little bit bigger than the V2. The other part of the blown up V2, you know. Of course it has some more modern electronic equipment in it, this kind of thing,
yeah.
But the power plant itself was pretty much the same, except for the new data. Of course, when we came in the same territory, which is 5 years ago, we came in the state area, there wasn't much of the state area in the way of Delta, just the fact that we were affecting the two areas. We fired one new people to us. And then at that time, when we came down here, we're in the process of firing some snags and smaragdors and we were preparing for the boma firing and this kind of thing. Of course, there are no assembly facilities here. So the only butler type building which was over there to take was used by the snag people for their setup. And so we got half of it to check out the rest from the assembly rest and check it out. And of course, the checkout was figured out because just outside the door, the snark was running up their power plant and lots of noise. And then, so we prepared the ability to have a first rest on the end, put on the temporary lounge bed which we had there, down there next to the Beaumont area. And the only blockhouse which was here, the blockhouse. For this kind of moment, so we have to share this blockhouse with others, which is called Pepper System. So we fired the first from the first two, I guess, from the temporary pad, and in the meantime, we were working on finishing up that pad building, pad 56,
and our own blockhouse. Well, how did that first launch feel compared to the first one in Germany? Do you have anything you might want to say?
I don't know. It didn't excite me much more.
Probably not as much, really.
Because the first, I mean, the impression I had of the first one, actually the first one, no matter how little or it is, you know, I mean, the effect that you have is such that quite the mass up to the hill.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that is something.
Right.
But then, of course, I mean, since no one is taking time,
that's
just a matter of, of course, you have to be at house, then you might have a little more noise, but it all depends on the week and this many.
All right, that's right, yeah.
So, I don't know, it was, I mean, of course, it was satisfaction for us that we can do anything than here. So, I guess then later on, the next big, big step was when we started the first one, B. The biggest thing was the 1B, I mean, it was meant platform of Android, which was
I guess ahead. We
we're today with Dr. Kurt Delis at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Today is the 27th of April, 1972. Okay, you, what year, then, you came from Darmstadt, you were part of the Darmstadt
team. Darmstadt, one of my fraternity was the Steinhardt, who played a role in tournament at this time again.
Yeah, we had a long discussion with him.
Then he wanted me to come up, and I was sure, come up on a what, John Rutter's speech, that means supposedly an assignment, kind of an assignment, you know, that's almost like a war assignment, you move to the place on order. You're still paid by your old organization, but you're working for the new organization you are assigned to.
Yep.
Kind of a... But, and while I was in Tenemende during these years, several months at a time, more and more discussion came that I should move and do something there. I refused that. I wanted to stay in Darmstadt. And Professor Heder wanted me to stay in Darmstadt. And so we talked, my colleague, younger colleague, Mr. Jennifer, into going and joining the school. And that happened. Now, what was I doing in Darmstadt? I was an assistant professor. It's the only word you have here for the city. Not called a professor in German, it's called assistant, and they are called Oberassistant and Oberingenieur. They have all kinds of...
No, be probably equivalent to the lecturer.
Career title.
Category.
And I find here usually referred to as assistant professor. They are assistant to the professor rather than...
Right.
They don't have to have a professor in any case.
That's something like a reader or lecturer in English.
Yes. But they help students in the examination. They give classes to semester of the subject as for those who have a need to repeat it. It's called catechism, to repeat the stuff. And they do a lot of normal laboratory work, supervision, and so on. Now, from that point of view, we had laboratories available, and one fine day, Dr. von Braun came and he related to the professors, about 15% of the professors, what we wanted them to do, and not the same as 39, we were probably estimating the law, and came to a type of agreement that would make some of the Darmstadt University a very different research and development work for Canada. Part was the development I did, part was on integrated device. Now, then at a later time I was still invited to join Dr. von Braun, and on one of my visits he asked me into his office and that I had now two choices. Either I would join Tenemende or I would end up at Eastern Front.
No, I see. A nice choice. Yeah.
Nice choice. But I thought I could do it. But I did move, and I was assigned to test and understand.
Understand.
Well. And that's then I was first assigned to a certain area, CSN, the board, apparatus, steering mechanism.
Yeah. Right, I know the answer.
And took them to us on a killing essentially, where he has the more mechanical aspect of it and trying to affect the electrical, electronic, hearing aspect of it. I got to do it. And then eventually I had but then as such he moved into and then it became clear that the first in January, I think New Year's night in 1944-45, I was ordered to go to the Netherlands to ask in order to look for some problems that they had returned.
Yeah, this is an area I'd really like to just go into a little bit more detail on. Just stop here for a minute. I have gathered up and made part of this book about a 40 or 50 page summary of the operational uses of the CC. Quite interesting. I got this from sources from many, many different types of sources. I'd like to have you look at this. And it shows how the different breakdowns and groups in the Netherlands and Belgium, the firings, and I even have all the targets listed, the number of V2s launched against different targets and so on and so forth. Now, one of the questions that's always been in my mind is how much input did Payne Amundi, people like you have, on these operational launches? Now, I talked to Zyla this morning, for example, and he was, spent most of his time at the Haida Lodge in Haida Prouder. Situation. But he did not go to the Western Front, which you did. Mm-hmm. Now, the only military man I've talked to so far was Lieutenant Bond, who was on the front, from the Naval Command.